In Grand Teton National Park for many years, the White Grass Dude Ranch entertained visitors who came for mountain views and the chance to play cowboy. It closed in 1985, and soon the ranch's cabins and lodge started falling apart after people stopped using them. That's how White Grass joined a backlog of some 27,000 historic properties nationwide that the National Park Service couldn't afford to maintain. But things have changed. Wyoming Public Radio's Rebecca Huntington attended a recent rope cutting to celebrate the ranch's revival.
At the event celebrating the complete rehab of 13 rustic cabins at White Grass, Barb Paul of the National Trust for Historic Preservation said she almost couldn't believe the ranch survived.
The first time I saw this place, it looked quite different than the way it looks today. And White Grass, along with many other historic structures in the park, had suffered from years of deferred maintenance and was severely deteriorating. In fact, many of you remember, probably felt that it really was too far gone to be brought back to this wonderful condition.
Paul said efforts to rescue the ranch started 13 years ago. That's when then-Interior Secretary Gail Norton signed an agreement with the Trust President Richard Moe to rescue the ranch. The Park Service has spent about $2 million, while the Trust chipped in another $1 million to restore the cabins. The main lodge and guest cabins sit scattered along the edge of a grassy meadow, where wildlife still freely roam at the foot of the Teton Mountains. Homesteaded in 1913, White Grass capitalized on this magnificent setting, switching from raising cattle to entertaining dudes, or those from outside the West, which was more profitable. Catherine Watson is the director of the Western Center for Historic Preservation, now based at White Grass. She says it will now be a model training ground, where people can come learn how to do the same kind of restoration for other historic properties throughout the West.
And we're really the only center doing this on what we call traditionally built resources. So things like log cabins. Our range is so large. We work from Alaska down to Hawaii.
Wood chips fly as volunteer Jack Schinkle uses an axe and chisel to carve a saddle-shaped notch into a log.
All of these cabins, well, most all of them used the round notch in the corners, and this is how they made the notches to fit.
It's just the kind of skill that will be taught here. Watson says White Grass's resurrection marks a symbolic shift away from Park Service policies of the 1980s and 90s that favored letting buildings decay to restore natural landscapes.
So this has been a total shift in Park Service management, not just in this park, but in a lot of large Western quote-unquote natural parks, to really bring cultural resources to an equal footing with the natural resources.
Grand Teton National Park Superintendent David Vela agrees.
I don't frankly buy the notion that we have historical parks and natural parks. We have resource-rich parks that have cultural values and natural values.
But he says that doesn't mean you can save every structure.
Because we have close to 700 historic assets in the park. And if it were up to me, that we would preserve and protect every single one of them, because every one of them has a unique story. But that's not the reality. So the reality is we have to look at which assets provide the greatest level and opportunity of preservation and protection, but also that provide a representative sample of the stories.
And White Grass has plenty of stories. Beth Thomas Wooden first came to White Grass as a guest when she was 8 years old in 1954. She returned often and eventually went from being a guest to working as a wrangler.
Oh, I loved it. That was my life ambition, was to be a wrangler at White Grass. So.
Once she started working summers at the ranch, Wooden invited her childhood friend from Philadelphia, Olivia Meeks, to join her.
When Bethy and I came out here, we weren't even in a cabin. We were in a tent up in those woods. And that was in the day when the park didn't really have strong rules about bears and dumps. And so there we were up in that tent, and there was a dump down there that was frequented by a bear.
And we were near the kitchen. That was the worst.
Because
the bears would come to the kitchen, and they had to go by our tent to get to the kitchen.
Yeah, it was kind of wild and woolly.
Meigs even met her husband here. Just one of the many romances that made White Grassers, as they call themselves, fall in love with the place and want to save it. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Rebecca Huntington in Jackson.
This week we've been celebrating the 50th anniversary of Wyoming Public Radio, and in that time we've encountered some interesting characters, dignitaries, and just plain interesting folks. One person that qualified for all three of those categories was former Governor Ed Hirschler. Hirschler was Wyoming's only three-term governor, serving the state from 1975 until 1985. Governor Hirschler was a longtime friend of Wyoming Public Radio, and he appeared on this station weeks before he died in 1990. I had a chance to record this speech given by Governor Hirschler in Laramie towards the end of his time as governor. Hirschler had a commanding presence and had an amazing sense of humor. We played this clip as part of his obituary piece over 25 years ago.
I'm reminded of a story that was told to me some few years ago about a pope and an eastern governor who passed away on the same day. Both of these fine gentlemen reached the pearly gates at the same time. And they stood there talking, and they struck up a very quick and fast friendship, and they hoped that their housing assignments in heaven would be close together so that they could commiserate and continue their newfound friendship. And the governor drew the first assignment and was given a spacious condominium with all of the elements of luxury. And the pope, however, was assigned to a small apartment with nothing more than the bare essentials. And the pope, feeling that there must have been some mistake, went back and checked with St. Peter to see whether or not there had in fact been an error. And St. Peter replied that there was no error. And he said to the pope, "While we've had many a popes arrive here as their final destination, this is our first governor." And perhaps it's the complexity of our jobs that causes us to be the brunt, I suspect, of many barbed jokes.